Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. I think it's helpful to reflect on how we approach the meditation. Sometimes, especially in the West, of course, the equation is sometimes, yeah, Buddhism equals meditation, meditation equals Buddhism. Not quite. I'm not at all right, actually. When we reflect on how we approach our meditation, it does give us a window on aspects of how we approach the teachings and how we can use the teachings of the Buddha. When the Buddha teaches the mindfulness of breathing, there's a particular approach that he uses and emphasizes, relying on aspects of, say, like calming and experiencing in the discourse that the Buddha gives on mindfulness of breathing, and it's broken up into four elements following the Satipatthana Sutta of body, feeling, mind, and phenomena. Those two verbs or actions are probably the most frequently mentioned, so that sense of experiencing or being sensitive to the entire body, experiencing or being sensitive to aspects of joy, of happiness, aspects of feeling and perception, that which conditions the mind, being experiencing or being sensitive to the mind itself, calming, aspects of calming, calming the bodily formation, calming mental formations, calming, gladdening the mind. These are all actions that the Buddha encourages us. So often when we hear meditation instruction, or when we conceive of the meditation itself for ourselves, we often use the word watching the breath, watching the mind. And that watching tends to actually separate us from it. In the very act of watching or seeing, it becomes objectified. It becomes something external. I think that that's not so useful, not so fruitful. I think it's very important to be finding ways that we can be experiencing and touching the breath, experiencing, being sensitive to that element of when we touch something, we're both touching it, but we're being touched by it as well. There's an engagement there. There's a meeting of something. Whereas when we watch or we see something, not necessarily being seen by it, it's not reciprocal. When the Buddha advises in that way, I think it's an important approach to be recognizing its value. because the tendency for us is to objectify and to separate ourselves from things, from experience, from phenomena. And when we do that, we're not connected to it. We don't make a connection with it. Finding the ways that we can be both connected to our body, be connected to our minds, connected to the world around us, and in a way that is sensitive to. I mean, it's interesting that the Buddha doesn't actually even specify where we pay attention in terms of, what do we take as, when we take the breath as the object, what does the Buddha advise? Do we pay attention at the nose? Do we pay attention at the stomach? Do we pay attention at the, where? And the Buddha doesn't actually specify sort of that sort of like bringing mindfulness to the fore, bringing awareness to the breath, so that gives us a lot more leeway to explore, to experiment with, what is it that makes sense? What is it that feels comfortable? What is it that is useful for helping to clarify the experience of the breathing process and its connection to the mind and body? So often we approach it from a wanting to be absolutely sure that we're doing the right thing and getting the right method and getting the right ideological basis for being a proper breathing meditator. That leaves us up in the head and really not connecting with the experience. So reflect on how to approach that and how that experience of calming, of making tranquil, of experiencing, being sensitive to the breath, to the feelings, to the mind, how much that plays a role, and to explore that. And I think one of the qualities that is helpful to integrate into the process of mindfulness of breathing as an approach and as a ground as of attitude is also the aspects of metta, of loving kindness. Loving kindness, compassion, these two qualities, which similarly can easily become objects objectified of what we think we should be doing, or what we should be, what kind of mental state we should be directing toward the outside world. But the Buddha's approach is really one of the first base that we should be establishing for loving kindness and compassion is for ourselves. Say, what better place to begin than just that the process of breathing. How can we breathe in and breathe out with a quality that is imbued with kindness and care and empathy, and just to be able to explore that as on an in breath and on an out breath, and how that can be integrated into our experience of the mind and body in the moment. The quality of loving kindness and compassion are on a mental level or on a constituent level but free from ill will and free from harming. And when one recognizes oftentimes how much force we apply to the mind, how much the demands that we place on our mind, like we're just sit down to meditate there's already the kind of thoughts going through the mind of just trying to control and to force and control the breathing, control the mind, control the kind of emotional content. Stay with this object. Stick on the breath. Stick on and wow, that's not very compassionate. It's not even very it's not really empathizing with the process, not even tuning in. It's sort of the degrees of judgment that go on. One starts to put the mind on the breath and focus on the breath and watch the breath, and then the mind wanders a little bit and it's, I lost it again. It's just kind of judgments that come and the kind of impatience that's there. And then we finish a session of meditation and wonder why we're kind of tired or don't actually feel very good. I think the approach on a moment-to-moment, breath-by-breath basis is it's incredibly important. And that re-evaluating or revisiting, how am I meditating? Am I actually meditating in the way that the Buddha encouraged? Where did I pick up this sort of extra baggage of judgments and forcing and impatience and it was kind of the Yeah, we sort of, because on a rational level, we kind of feel, yeah, I want to sit down and meditate, sit down, close my eyes, meditate, I want to be peaceful. And then all of a sudden, this kind of tyrant emerges out of somewhere and isn't really very kind or very empathetic at all. So recollect what is the basic approach? What are the values that the Buddha emphasizes? So that value on connecting with, making contact with, experiencing the breath, calming and settling, making tranquil, as opposed to forcing and controlling. And so we need to be able to. Of course, this has to be done with mindfulness awareness, but that concept of mindfulness, is oftentimes implies in our mind this kind of controlling and being in control. Whereas, so much of practice is really trusting in the experience, trusting in the ability of the mind to and the heart to be present and the value of that. So the sense of recognizing how much just the application of attentiveness and clarity is not so much a forcing or gaining principle, but a relinquishing or letting go, a putting down of the ways that we complicate the experience of our meditation. That sense of relying on that making a connection, a touching the breath, touching the body, being in contact and connection with the breath, paying attention to the rhythm of the breath by being present with it, allowing the awareness to explore that, and then to settle into that, to allow it to become calm. There's a brightness of mind and an expansiveness of mind and heart that naturally arises, and this is where we can say where the Thai forest masters tend to make that the emphasis on just being with the knowing, allowing that knowing to establish itself, and not as a rational ideological framework, but as that simple quality of knowing that is imbued with kind of a kindness and empathy, allowing that attention to establish and settle within itself. So they, and of course the breath is always there. And the breath comes in, the breath comes out, and just learning how to connect with that. Connecting with the body that is sitting. Is it comfortable? Is it stable? Is it agitated? What does it feel like? So that sense of being present. Establish that connection with the breath and awareness, and grounded in that quality of kindness and empathy. There, one can start to recognize the ways that the mind throws up the sense of the sense of I, the sense of me, the sense of self, and normally we spend our time either being pushed or pulled or running after that whole identification with self, or the sense of I, that. But when there's a stable base or a stable foundation of awareness, then one can just start recognizing that it's just a habit of how we create a feeling, a being, a somebody. Somebody who is happy about something, somebody who's sad, somebody who's indifferent. We're kind of addicted to this being a somebody, and then if we just stay with experience, then it's almost like we start to get agitated, and I've got to be a somebody. And what if I'm a nobody here? And so that pull to identification and being a somebody. So that recognizing the voices of these different somebodies, because there's this tendency to the commentary of the mind, but it's the commentary that's just trying to be a somebody. Somebody who's nagging at you, somebody who's sort of kind of patting you on the back, somebody who's trying to be clever, somebody who's lamenting how hopeless and dumb you are. And it's just this constant kind of pull to being a somebody, and practice is really being able to shine that allow that to arise, and because it's going to arise anyway, but arising within that sphere of knowing, sphere of awareness, and not buying into it, and being able to see it clearly, because that pull to identification with the various somebodies that we conjure up, being the somebody who's a good meditator, somebody who's an incompetent meditator. I mean, all of those things are, we just keep buying into the assumption of that being a somebody. And when we reflect on the quality of relinquishment of renunciation, that it's not so much renouncing things, or although we do that, but the kind of relinquishment and renouncing is in the need to have a sense of self that identifies, so being able to release and to relinquish, to let go of those assumptions of somebody, of selfhood, being somebody who has to kind of prop up this particular position. The purpose of our practice isn't to be a nobody, because all that is a somebody who's a nobody, and that, but it's we tie ourselves in knots like that. So that's this sense of recognizing that impermanence, that uncertainty, and that compulsion towards identification of being somebody, something. And recognizing that quality of, say, of calming, of peace, is it's grounded in that willingness to set down, set aside the habit of identifying with that self, that's the me, that I, that is constantly percolating up. And having a quality of kindness and compassion toward it. And because on a certain level, it's that even if we prop up or attempt to prop up a somebody who is good and happy and competent and whatnot, that it's so tiring and kind of pathetic. It's really worthy of kindness and compassion, and so that just on that. And just breathing in and breathing out, establishing the foundation of our mindfulness of breathing. The Buddha when he teaches that. This is a complete path. The mindfulness of breathing is a complete path to liberation. But of course, in order for it to complete, one has to integrate it with all aspects of our experience. But one recognizes that. The attitudes that we carry can be highlighted and understood just through the meditation, through this practice of the mindfulness of breathing. And as we develop that attention and awareness, and adjust our Our fundamental view, views of ourselves and the Dhamma, then there's a, we give ourselves the opportunity to experience the Dhamma. And that Ajahn Chah oftentimes talked about kind of a progression of a practice, and saying like, first you know the Dhamma, then you see the Dhamma, then you have to be the Dhamma. So it's on a certain level, it's when you first knowing the Dhamma is that intellectual framework and having the teachings gaining some proficiency of the frameworks of the teachings, and then putting them into practice. And as we put them into practice more and more, more consistently, things start to clarify. It starts to gel. It starts to become real. It's rather than it just being a theory, just being a an ideal that we would like to experience. One starts to see the fruits of the practice, of course that is a great encouragement. And I'd say, and then as we continue to recognize the fruits, then they becomes a natural part of our being. It becomes a natural part of our expression, and it's the same truth of impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, not self. Same truth of a cause and effect relationships. It's the same truth of virtue of meditation, of wisdom. But it really does start to deepen and become an integral part of our being, of how we relate to ourselves and the world around us, so that the practice is really one of returning to these roots and foundations, and learning how to imbue them with a kindness, with a patience, but giving an importance to them. So that one is really allowed to really steep oneself in them, to really let it infuse and one's being, so that the image of that Suzuki Roshi gives of the one being going out in the fog, and one doesn't really notice it at first that one's getting soaked, thoroughly soaked, but it happens on a gradual way, but it begins to really permeate everything, so that the practice is like that. But in order for that to really take effect, allow it to us to be the Dhamma, we do need to keep wisely reflecting with discernment, really recognizing how to apply these teachings skillfully. And so that's practice. to offer that reflection this evening.